I have a special guest calling in this morning, Representative Natalie Zalesnikar. Natalie, I hope I pronounced that name correctly, is with me this morning via phone. Thank you so much for being here, Natalie.
I'm honored to be here.
Yes. And are you calling in from the cities? I know you had a lot of legislative work going last night.
I am. I'm at the state office building as I speak this morning.
Wonderful. And I mean, maybe the best thing will be, I know you were working late last night. Do you want to explain what was going on last night? We hear that there's just a lot happening down at the Minnesota legislature right now. And so tell us what you did last night.
You know, last night it was the Democracy for People Act, which was called House File 3, which, you know, sounds great. And it was an elections bill. And so really what it was about was changes and provisions that would allow 16 and 17 year olds to pre-register. When you get your driver's license, when you get tabs, those types of things, you'd be going through an automatic pre-registration type thing. When you apply for medical assistance or MnSure, you would be automatically in there, and you'd have to do an opt-out before you'd be an opt-out. But the more concerning language for me as I listened to the night was the realization that in the bill there was carve-outs that would allow nonprofits to funnel billions into American politics. And so there was a lot of testifying about, you know, a Swiss billionaire, and he had donated billions into Minnesota's election, and the language in this bill will allow that to continue. And so, you know, when I look at what that means, it is concerning for us in Minnesota politics, I think, today.
Yeah. Can you tell us the number of this bill so people can look it up?
Yeah, it's House File 3.
Okay, that's simple enough.
Yeah, House File 3 is what it is. And so, you know, it just, the language and the parts that were really concerning to me were lines 25.7 down to line 25.13, where it's talking about, you know, a nonprofit corporation that carries out activities in the state and foreign influenced corporations. That's, to me, the defining thing of concern for us for our elections. And so, you know, this bill should be 100% about election integrity. And that piece, having that those items carved out with language, which we offered multiple amendments, and they were not taken by the majority party, the Democrats, to me was disappointing, because that should be something we all don't want.
Hmm. And so in the end, was there a vote for this?
Yeah, it was a vote. The Democrats passed it, and it will now go to the Senate. And, you know, not it hasn't went into law yet. It passed the House chamber last night in the omnibus bill, and it will go to the Senate. So people still have the chance to, you know, email and contact their senators and let them know what their feeling is, because, you know, the way it works with the nonprofits is that my understanding of it is that, you know, they don't have to disclose their names. And so when you're doing your tax filings on your sources of incomes for a nonprofit, these will be anonymous persons that can be foreign influenced, as this bill is written right now. And this last election had a Swiss person who's been involved in the Center for American Progress, is a nonprofit that sounds like all the right things, but they have several nonprofits, 50 others they founded under that umbrella, and they're taking money from from billionaires that can come from foreign investments now.
Hmm. Well, thank you for alerting people to that concern of yours, and also being very specific so people can look it up. I think that is a really helpful way to share information. What would you say are our high priorities right now for your office? Like, what are you especially focused on? I know there's just a lot, so maybe more than you can say here, but you want to give us a few?
Yeah. You know, just this week, Minnesota Public Radio quoted me regarding the nursing homes, and the Star and Tribune has written about the nursing homes.
Yes.
And also the Duluth newspaper, many of them across the state are writing articles about really the the peril we are in for nursing homes. And there's 300 nursing homes in the state of Minnesota, and several closed last year, and we're slated for several to close this year. And this is really alarming because we have we're going to have 20%, you know, or more of our population, in that baby boomers are coming, and by 2030, and that's, you know, very close. We're talking 7 years away, and they're already starting to enter our long-term care entities. And if we lose that anchor in our communities, the backup plan is going to be hospitals. And I've talked to all of the hospitals in my district, and they are already bottlenecked, not having discharge plans for seniors. So that is a huge concern to me, because the budget bill, when we have $20 billion surplus, and the people that built this state and found, and really gave us the freedoms we all have today for our country, are being left out of the funding. I mean, we're funding assisted livings, we're funding home care, we're funding nonprofits at paces I've never seen before, and we are not taking care of nursing home funding.
Do you know what's the reasoning behind that, Natalie, or do you hear objections to what you're saying?
The philosophy is that there's the way the nursing homes, I think it's a lack of understanding, and I say that because I'm probably the only one down here that's actually, you know, been a nursing home administrator and spoke with colleagues across the state and seen these people's financials. And I think there's the reimbursement system in Minnesota is very complicated for nursing homes, and the way it works is providers have to wait about 18 to 24 months for the state auditing process of the financials to take place, which is part of the rules. And once that audit takes place of the actual cost of the operation, you know, the salaries, the labor, all these things, they determine what the charges are going to be for the residents who live in a nursing home. And whether they're on medical assistance or their private pay, they have rate equalization in the state of Minnesota for nursing homes. So that means if you're private pay or medical assistance, the reimbursement value for your daily rate or your monthly bill is going to be the same. And so a lot of our facilities have a high medical assistance rate right now, and the facilities have to carry the cost for, you know, almost 2 years. So you can see what's happened in recent years. We've been in COVID lockdown. We didn't take admissions. We had people at home. We were in a pandemic with very high costs. Those reimbursement government-funded things for COVID supplies, all that have ended. And so the repercussions of staffing have not ended. And the labor costs, every provider has had to increase labor costs. And the state feels like if they just wait, it'll work itself out because you get reimbursed for your actual costs incurred. But what they're not realizing is there's nothing for inflation. So they're giving every program I see right now, they're giving inflationary adjustments in the budget for government employees, for programs, for everything. And they're not looking at what the inflation's been for. Think of what food costs right now. I mean,
right.
You know, nursing supplies, food costs, your heat, the property taxes. You know, if you're a church affiliated or nonprofit, you don't pay property taxes. All the other nursing homes pay property taxes. Everybody's property taxes have went through the roof in Minnesota. So there's a lot of real issues of why. And so I think they believe they don't need to increase the funding when nursing homes are on credit lines across the state. So the model's not working, and it's very labor dependent. And so if you don't, they set the mandates for the state. The state sets all the rules on, you know, what you have to do to provide the care, but the facilities have no ability to go out and increase rates or anything because the state sets the rates. So they're really handicapped right now, which is a real concern for many Minnesotans. And I'm getting just emails by the day and phone calls. People can't place their loved ones right now.
So, and Natalie, what are you suggesting as the first or maybe first and second steps to remedy this?
My first, people said, how can we do this? I said, we are taking $1.7 billion of this surplus to create another government agency called Paid Family Medical Leave. And while that sounds great, what I tell people is that this model is based off of Washington and other states. It's modeled after states that we've seen the rates go up for the 0.7% payroll tax that's in there, and for employers and for the employees. And so that $1.7 billion that's being used for seed money, I believe should be going to seniors to help eliminate Social Security tax once and for all for the state of Minnesota, and to also fund seniors in nursing homes appropriately and make sure that we have an upload on, you know, making sure that we're dealing with inflation that's happened there like we are in every other entity. And so we're choosing to start a new government program when we already have had every department say they can't audit the programs we have right now effectively. We can't make sure the money's always going to grants appropriately to prevent fraud. But yet we're going to grow another government program that's going to cost billions of dollars at a time when our businesses are crawling out of COVID and the small businesses are saying, look, we can't do a program that's going to include every business with one employee. We're not all Amazon. They're modeling this off of Target and Amazon and that type of thing. And so my sense is put this on pause. I would love to see some type of a program for our employees, but I think we are pushing this through at record speed, and it's going to have a detrimental, it's going to have unintended consequences that people aren't thinking through. And I think we need to never have some type of a leave act. Let's modify this. You know, right now it's set for 24 weeks, 12 weeks family, 12 weeks medical per employee per year eligibility. I think that's way too long, too many weeks. I think we need to model the federal plan, which is 12 weeks. You start with something smaller. You don't go with 24 weeks after we've had COVID. So I take the $1.7 billion and make sure we have our fundamental infrastructure solid first, education, police, nursing homes, and then move forward with this paid family leave act. That would be what I would do.
All right. And can you also explain, for listeners that want to dive a little deeper into the nursing home issue, do you have any easy resources or bills or ways that they can become more informed?
You know, they can surely follow me. I try to do whiteboard discussions on my website. They can go on it for Facebook, therepresentative.natalie.zeleznikar, and follow my whiteboard or my video outlines. The nursing home funding, the bill is, Edelson did a bill and Chair Knorr did a bill, and they were both, I signed on to both the Democratic bills for the nursing homes. They have a many, many pieces in it. The reality is it's going to cost money if we're going to care for our seniors. And my feeling is if we have a $20 billion surplus right now, we have to fix this problem because people want to be able to take 12 weeks off to care for a loved one. But what I'm explaining to people is what happens when the 12 weeks are over and they want to go back to work and there's no nursing homes left, and the assisted livings and the independent livings can't take care of your 95-year-old mother. They need 24-hour nurses. Nursing homes are the only place that predominantly have nurses around the clock. And so we have a puzzle piece for Minnesota where if we're going to be one Minnesota, and there's multiple important puzzle pieces, but if nursing homes don't exist, it is going to strain our system, and we are going to see our hospitals overflowing with people in the hallways because they have to accept everybody at the hospital. And that is the highest cost center. So I see it as very short-sighted. So I will put stuff on my Facebook page. I try to put things out on Twitter to educate people on where they can go on bills to make it easy. And I'll give them a list of all the bills I've signed up on, and they can follow them and how to do it.
All right. It sounds like this is something, I know I've heard this from you before, and I hope that you're making headway, because I know this is something you work tirelessly for. And
well, one of the things I hear from people all the time, and I heard it door knocking, is, you know, Natalie, I'm busy working. I'm in school. I'm raising my family. I have kids, and I'm working on homework. They're doing what I was doing, you know, 20, 30 years ago, working hard and doing all those things. And, you know, you hope that your elected officials are making good decisions and the best interests of the people up in northern Minnesota and for the state of Minnesota. And so I'm trying to put things out on simple spreadsheets that let them know the bill, let them know what it is, let them know who to contact, because people, you know, people are very busy, and they're, and we're all, you know, trusting that people are just looking out for our best interest. And I think for the most part that that's been a great assumption, but I think there are situations right now where people have to understand what's happening so that they can be involved and engaged in government.
Absolutely. I mean, if we don't know what's happening or we don't understand what's happening, there's no way we can be usefully engaged in contributing to that. Can I ask you a little, just, I know we're running out of time quickly, but
sure.
We hear that the polarization in America is happening in Minnesota, and that the two parties have a hard time working together. What has been your experience down in St. Paul?
You know, I would say my experience has been very positive. You know, we've had, I'm on committees, I'm on Health and Human Services on the finance side, I'm on workforce, I'm also on the children and families side. And so, you know, I've worked with all the chairs from the Democrat side. I've enjoyed working with all of them. I've worked with many of them. I've met the colleagues on the other side. And so, you know, there are times when that is the nature of what this is. I mean, there are two philosophies here at the Capitol. We have, you know, mm-hmm. more than two parties. We have independents. We have, you know, we have libertarians. We have Republicans, and we have Democrats. But at the end of the day, my goal is to find as much common ground as we can. We are not always going to agree on 100% of things. That's an unrealistic goal. So I think right now where some of the angst comes is a lot of the policies that are being written are written under a mandate that we're going to have 100% this. And I'll give you an example. You know, the clean energy bill that went through is a mandate that is, you know, really 100, we're going 100% one way. So I think there's some people saying, does it need to be 100%? Do we really need to eliminate, you know, gas-fueled mm-hmm. lawn equipment? Do we have to have can we not have Zambonis on an ice rink anymore? That, does everything have to have a battery? And, you know, how are we going to do that in northern Minnesota? So to me, I look at it at a lens of what's reasonable, you know, because it isn't an all or none thing. I mean, having a wind and solar is a good thing. You know, but it doesn't mean when you do wind and solar that fossil fuels are a bad thing. And it right now, it seems there's a lot of language where it's an all or none mentality. And I think in a lot of things in life, that type of mentality becomes dangerous, whether it's on the Republican side or whether it's on the Democrat side.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's looking at, in everything, you have to make a balance. And there's trade-offs sometimes. You know, the goal is 100%. But in life, you sometimes have to go 80% is, you know, well, I can live with 80%. And because the costs of 100% are going to be detrimental to the people of Minnesota. And the people, if the people perish, then all the other goals are not, they're off the table because we haven't even
right.
taken care of the people then.
Right.
So that's kind of what I try to do, because there are good pieces in many things, but you have to look at the unintended consequences as well as the intended consequences.
Yes. Well, we are out of time. Thank you so much, Representative, and I hope we can have you again soon. This has been a really wonderful way to...
I'll be in Two Harbors at the high school.
Yes.
For the monthly forum, it will be at the Two Harbors High School for all of Lake County. This time, Representative Roger Scrabble, who represents 3A, and I represent 3B, will be at the high school open for questions and just talking about the process and being available for the citizens to ask questions. So love to have people come join us at the high school at 3:30 on Sunday.
Yes, thank you so much for mentioning that. I can't believe I almost forgot to mention that, but a very well apropos announcement. So see you all on Sunday, listeners, and thanks again, Natalie. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye. That was Representative Natalie Zalesnikar, one of our state representatives.